Alright guys, you are locked on Falcons. I'm your host Aaron Freeman. Today I'm joined by the Falcoholic himself, Dave Choate, and we are going to be talking about the Falcons coaching changes.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Alright guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans, and of course the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. Today I'm joined by another longtime person that has covered the Falcons for many years, just as long as I have, over at the Falcoholic, to a much greater degree of success, much to my chagrin, that is Dave Choate. We're going to be talking today about sort of the Falcons' recent coaching changes, get Dave's thoughts on sort of what's going on and what's potentially going to come up next for the Falcons as far as these coaching hires go. So welcome back to the show, Dave.
Oh, thanks for the great intro.
Okay.
I appreciate the word chagrin.
Okay. So Dave, let's jump right into it. So, you know, Monday morning when the Falcons dismissed all three of their coordinators, and we've subsequently discovered that Wade Harmon is out, and maybe we'll find out that some other assistants, you know, may have not had their contracts renewed or whatever the case may be as the Falcons make some of these changes. What were your thoughts and sort of were you expecting the Falcons to sort of clean house in the way that they did?
Not quite. You know, I had come around to the idea that Sark was going to get fired somewhere in the middle of that losing streak where the offense just looked so inept. And I had come around for Manuel as well, just because I think you can make the case, you know, and again, with both coordinators, it's how much do you hang on them for, you know, the failures of the units. But the defense certainly hadn't made the kind of progress you would like, even in the face of injuries. I would say the surprise for me ultimately was Keith Armstrong. You know, the return game continues to be a bit of a joke for the Falcons, but generally speaking, I thought special teams actually did improve this year over 2017. And so I wasn't expecting him to go anywhere else, but it appears that the Falcons are ready to make some philosophical changes or get some new voices in the room or whatever you want to call it. So, you know, it's not hugely surprising that they just decided to clean house. I was just a little bit surprised that they went with Armstrong too.
Okay. Yeah, you know, I one of the things I said on this podcast was I was curious if that three-game winning streak at the end where the offense looked like it got a little bit more pep in the step, the defense started making plays, whether that would be enough to save either one of their jobs. It seemed likely that somebody was going to get the axe, and sort of waffling, for me at least, between the two, whether it was Sark or Manuel, who would get that job, or who would get that, you know, hit the chopping block. I'm curious, sort of, do you feel like there was one guy that was more deserving of being fired than the other?
Yeah, I think it probably is Sark at the end of the day. You know, I don't know what Dan Quinn's day-to-day involvement or game-day involvement with the defense has been with Manuel at the helm. So it's difficult to disentangle those two a little bit, I think. You know, hopefully it turns out to be that Dan Quinn wasn't really that involved and he's going to be amazing next year running the defense himself, because we need that. But I think to your point on Twitter, just I think yesterday, which I thought was a good one, you know, Sark's ability to get this offense up and ready for, you know, impactful games against good teams, never really seemed to evolve over the last 2 years. And, you know, there were personnel failings. I think the offensive line really hurt the offense throughout this year, certainly earlier on. But at the end of the day, when you have the talent you have here and you go five games where you know, can't even score 20 points, and generally speaking, you don't have the level of eliteness you would anticipate from the weapons you have on hand, I think that goes on the offensive coordinator. He's always going to be, at the very least, the scapegoat for it. So I think he was probably the guy that, if you had to pick one, was the one who deserved to go.
Okay, that's fair. And we'll be talking about some of the potential candidates to replace the offensive coordinator coming up in a moment. But I do want to plug the two draft-related podcasts on the Locked On Podcast Network. First is the Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema, The second is the Draft Dudes podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. You can find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, as well as at thedraftnetwork.com, your one-stop shop for all 2019 offseason and draft-related information. Your team every day. So, Dave, let's talk about sort of the offensive coordinator, because we already sort of know that Dan Quinn is taking over the defensive play calling, and maybe we'll see some shuffling of the coaching staff. Maybe we'll see Raheem Morris, or they'll hire somebody else to sort of come in and sort of support him in that role, so he's not just, you know, on an island by himself. Let's talk about maybe the main focus, which is who's going to be calling plays for Matt Ryan in this offense next season. And it seems like the three prime candidates as of we're recording this Wednesday afternoon seem to be Gary Kubiak, Dirk Koetter, and Daryl Bevel as the names that are most prominently mentioned. I guess we might find out that other people are. We know Bevel, I think, either has interviewed or is going to interview this week. I saw a tweet before we just jumped on that Dirk Koetter is scheduled to interview at some point this week. I didn't check to see what exactly the day was. And we've sort of heard connections between Kubiak and the Falcons, or at least Kubiak might be interested in the Falcons and whatnot. So I'm curious, sort of looking at those three names, is there sort of one that stands out in your eyes, or maybe one that you would like the Falcons to hire, or maybe one that stands out that you would want the Falcons to stay away from, either or?
Yeah, Kubiak is the one that to me is the standout candidate. You know, I just look at his track record of success over the years, sort of his quote unquote scheme fit with what the Falcons already want to do here. And you know, I know that the offensive line would likely need to be addressed a little bit if Kubiak took over, but it needs to be addressed anyways. I think otherwise, you know, it's no great surprise that he seems interested in the Falcons, you know, escaping Denver, where there's no offense to speak of, to come to Atlanta and run something with these guys would be terrific for him. And I think that given how established he is and given how successful he's been at past stops, he would be my preferred candidate. He'd be somebody that I'd love to see step into that role. One I'd like to see them stay away from, you know, if it's true that Kubiak is not going to be the top candidate here, or not even a candidate, because again, we haven't seen the Falcons set up anything with him just yet. I don't have a strong preference between Bevel and Koetter. I understand why Koetter is being linked to the Falcons and why he might be a strong choice, and why I might regret tweeting out a couple days ago that he was probably not going to be the hire because of his relationship with Matt Ryan and because of the success that he had, at least in 2012, with this offense. But, you know, to me, both of them are not inspiring choices. You know, they both have had some success. I think there's a comfort level with both hires, but you know, this offense sort of went as far as it could go with somebody who was a decent coordinator, I'd say. And I'm looking for somebody who's either a fresh mind or someone who's really done this and done this well for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with me, I have a complicated relationship with Dirk Koetter, I would say, because, you know, I really thought he did not do a good job in that 2013 season. I know there were various factors that sort of limited him then. But for me, at least, like, I don't know, like, I don't have this major issue with Bevel. I know he's not necessarily this, as you say, inspiring choice, but like, at least he, you know, from my perspective, it's like Dan Quinn has now twice hired offensive coordinators that he had never had a working relationship with. You know, he had coached against Kyle Shanahan once in his career when he was a defensive assistant coach, and that was way back in 2009 when Shanahan was coordinating the Texans, and he was just a lowly defensive line coach under the great Jim Mora back in Seattle. And, you know, then he hires Sark, who comes highly recommended from Pete Carroll, but, like, you know, you know, Pete Carroll had worked with Sark like in 2010 or something, you know, so it'd been a while. And he, you know, Saban was also in on that sort of recommendation as well. But to basically go to Dirk Cutter, another coach he hasn't, as far as I'm concerned, worked with, to me, at least in that sense, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, especially given that I don't think Cutter, like, you can look back that fondly on the Cutter years in Atlanta, nor the Cutter years in Tampa Bay, nor the Cutter years in Jacksonville, as if he was like this prolific producer. Like, it's not to say those offenses were bad, particularly in Atlanta, but it's just like they weren't any better than sort of the last 2 years of Sark have been. So from that perspective, that's why I would rather see Bevel come in here, just because he has ran a very similar offense in Seattle, which, you know, Dan Quinn has tried to replicate, and there's some familiarity there. And, you know, it's not, you know, you can talk about how much of Seattle's success was due to their defense and how much of Bevel's success on offense was just basically due to Russell Wilson running around and doing Russell Wilson things, which you're not expecting Matt Ryan to do. But I don't know, just that seems to be a better choice in my eyes than Cutter. I just feel like we've been there, done that, and like going back to that, just, I don't know, it doesn't make any sense to me. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, no, that's a fair point too. And you know, Bevel, I would say he's not an inspiring choice to me. He's not a bad choice, certainly. And to your point, there is a level of familiarity there. I think that what concerns me most about Cutter is that he would be sort of the top choice of Matt Ryan. But I think we've seen that, you know, Matt Ryan's comfort level is important. Obviously, we've seen some transitions here. One in particular, you know, in the first year under Sark that drew a lot of attention. But I do think that, you know, sort of hiring an offensive coordinator because it's the guy that your quarterback wants is probably not the direction you should be going in. And to your point, you know, Cutter did have, I think, a pretty successful year in 2012, but 2013 and 2014 were pretty forgettable years. Even if you acknowledge that he was dealing with some real limitations in terms of personnel, you know, would he come in here and do as good a job as Sark? Sure. But I think the whole point of firing Sark was that you aimed a little higher than that the next time around.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And we'll have to see. Maybe there'll be somebody else that sort of emerges potentially, you know. We already have Greg Knapp in house, so we could, if we want to roll back the clock even further, we can go back to the Greg Knapp years, and I'm sure that would personally thrill you, Dave.
That is the greatest fear of my life at this
point. Oh man, like it, you know, I think does. It kind of raises the question, you know, the Falcons fired Sark. There were reasons for firing Sark, but are we at a situation where kind of the best we can hope is a semi-lateral move where just maybe, not to say that the offense won't improve, but basically we're just hoping to get sort of the good version of Sark, which we saw in the first half of this 2018 season. If we can get, like, you know, instead of getting 6 to 8 good games of offense, if we just get 10 to 12 good games, and that's really sort of maybe the potential best case scenario for this 2019 offense. And is that good enough if that's the case?
You know, to me, it's not really. And to, you know, I know that they're banking somewhat on defensive improvement, which I think you have to do at some point here because the defense can't continue to be a liability sort of year in, year out. So I fully expect that they'll get some sort of improvement there. But, you know, you look at this team and there are holes on offense, but the skill position players at the very least are so, so talented, so good. And even losing Tevin Coleman, which I think they're going to do, you know, their running back situation is a good one, I think. A lot of young talent there, assuming Freeman's healthy. To me, it doesn't make sense to sort of try to hit a single when you could hit a home run. We know that we're not necessarily going to get Kyle Shanahan back here again, and even he had his weak games on offense, certainly. But I just don't think that the slight upgrade from Sark to, you know, maybe two more quality games on offense per year. You know, sure, that's enough for a playoff berth when you look at the way this year unfolded, but you got to aim higher than that. This is a team that should have Super Bowl aspirations, I think. And their cutter is just not going to make that case very strongly for me. I'll keep an open mind. I try to always do that, but it's not the kind of hire that suggests we want to win it this year.
And do you feel like Bevel's any different if he's the guy?
Not really. Not for my case. I think that, you know, he has obviously a more proven track record in some ways than Cutter does. But he's the same kind of guy to me, where he's good. He'd be a good offensive coordinator. I have no doubt that the offense would probably function better under him, but I don't know if he's sort of that upgrade that I'm hoping for. And I might just be unusually picky this offseason.
Yeah, well, look, get in line. we'll come back and talk a little bit more about sort of what we think the team might need to do on offense or this offseason in terms of their personnel to make some of these changes in a moment. But if you're tired of football, maybe you just want to get in on the NBA side of the Locked On Podcast Network, where you can find a daily podcast devoted to all 30 NBA teams, including the Locked On Hawks podcast hosted by Brad Rowland. Find that wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So, Dave, you mentioned sort of like the offense isn't perfect. Everybody is looking at this offensive line as a priority to try to upgrade this offseason. You already mentioned the defense, and it seems like most people are of the mindset that the focus needs to be up front for the defense. So, you know, it's kind of weird how things sort of mirror each other, where, you know, the 2013 season was in sort of an injury plagued season, and then the following off season, the Falcons, you know, strove to get tougher in the trenches and went out and signed guys like Asamoah and Tyson Jackson and Paul Solia. And Asamoah worked out for a year; the other guys, not necessarily. It kind of seems like, you know, it's cyclical, and we're going to be back in a similar sort of mindset this offseason, where the goal is to get tougher in the trenches, and hopefully, you know, we will wind up with better options than, say, Paul Solia and Tyson Jackson. Do you agree with that point?
I do. I hope that D-Led doesn't have the occasion to talk about the toughness crusade this time around, because I do remember that offseason. It was almost a little bit cartoony how much they talked about, you know, that need for toughness. And I think they sort of, Mike Smith and Thomas Dimitroff at the time, took that in the wrong direction and assumed that toughness meant bigger. I don't know that we have the same issue with Dan Quinn and company, given their preferred type, but I do think we're very much in a similar situation where there's a lot of pressure on this team to upgrade in the trenches. And, you know, you just hope it doesn't lead to them making poor decisions with their money or their draft picks, as sometimes happens when you have an urgent need you need to fill right now.
Yeah. We'll see what happens. I feel reasonably confident that they can make significant gains on the defensive line. I feel less confident that this offseason, with who's going to be in free agency, with a bunch of other teams like Arizona and others that are offensive line needy but have way more cap space than the Falcons, and so are at least on paper in a position to outspend the team for some of the top offensive linemen, which I think there sort of are few and far between in this offseason. Plus you have a draft where, you know, historically, you know, getting quality offensive linemen in the draft has been more problematic as of late than it has been in previous, you know, years and decades. Just because of the nature of college football, and it doesn't seem like this year is going to be in sort of an outlier in the sense of, you know, great offensive line. I think it's better than some of the recent years, but certainly like the last couple of years, but not necessarily one where you can maybe count on rookies to come in and immediately change, you know, how the outcomes of maybe this 2019 season. So I think it'll be an interesting offseason for the Falcons to see what choices they make and see what focuses they have, and and obviously to see what type of players that they get. But, you know, at this point in time, you know, it's very early in the process. We're only a couple of days into January of 2019, and the offseason doesn't start off really until, you know, mid-March or whatnot. So I'm just curious, though, sort of, do you feel like reasonably optimistic that the Falcons can get most, if not all, of the things that they should be able to get done this offseason?
I think they should be able to get most. I share the concern about the offensive line, sort of looking for a piece that'll probably run about the time this podcast goes live, just on, you know, impending free agents for the Falcons. And I expected to go into that and look at the roster and decide that Andy Levitre would not be back. But now I'm looking at it and I'm saying, you know, given, again, the market and what the Falcons need, maybe he's going to be a little bit cheaper. Do they actually try to bring him back? And I think that the Falcons, I could see them drafting a tackle. I think that's a possibility. I still can't see them putting significant draft capital into guard. It's just not something they've done. And they've preferred to solve that apparently by having, you know, a lot of candidates for jobs and letting them duke it out. And I think that we're probably going to see that again. That's one of my major concerns about the offseason ahead. I do think that, you know, if your concern is getting another defensive tackle who can be a useful part of the rotation, if your concern is revamping defensive end significantly, given some of the failures and challenges there, I think they'll get that done. And I think they'll be able to sort of buttress a couple of weaker positions on the team right now, too, that are outside of the trenches. I'm looking at linebacker. I'm looking potentially at tight end if they're not convinced that Saubert's the guy going forward. But at the end of the day, it is all about the trenches. That's what has to get done. And until I see otherwise, I'm going to be a little bit skeptical about them really drastically improving two or three spots on the line, which I think you can argue they need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm with you on that. So I'm hoping right now, I'm hoping sort of with that same sort of skepticism that they can sort of, if they can only make baby steps of improvement on the offensive line, then they can make, you know, drastic leaps forward on the defensive line. And I can live with that. If that's the case, if the defensive line can be good enough in some weird reality where it can make up for the fact that the offensive line is just slightly better, you know, I can live with a good defensive line in another year of an okay offensive line if that is the case. But we'll have to see how that plays out. Any other thoughts on the coaching change? Do you have any candidates potentially for special teams coordinator that you want to leave us with, Dave, before we duck out of here?
Yeah, nobody super realistic. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about it, and I just realized that I've almost never said his name out loud. But Dave Taub.
I think it's Taub. I don't know either. Yeah. We're guessing here.
Okay, good. Well, I mean, your guess is as good as mine, but as unrealistic as it probably is, given that, you know, there's no particular reason for him to take a lateral move to the Falcons. I would love to see a guy like that with, again, an impressive track record. Otherwise, you know, I just hope whoever is coming in here is able to do something with a very diminished return game, if for no other reason than that I don't like being annoyed so many times in a Falcons game. But, you know, other than that, you know, I hope that they keep some of the better members of their staff intact. I was a little disappointed to see Wade Harmon going, but I'm guessing whoever's coming in is going to be bringing a tight ends coach with them, and that's probably why that happened. But I do think they've built a pretty good staff here by and large, and I'd hate to see it sort of scatter to the wind because of the coordinator changes.
Now, I'm sitting here thinking, are Harmon and Armstrong the last of the Mike Smith holdovers?
I think they are. Yeah, I think they are.
Okay, there might be some other random person that we can't think of right now, but it seems like, you know, so maybe it was just time to be like, to move on, and I don't know. Year five, I guess, Dan Quinn finally gets the coaching staff that he always wanted, I guess, maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's a narrative that we can push.
That's a comforting narrative, if it is.
Yeah. Well, Dave, let the people know what you guys have going on at the Falcoholic coming up?
Yeah, so we'll be starting next week taking a look position by position at the roster, which is custom. We always try to take a look at sort of how it looked year over year, what it might look like going forward, et cetera. So you can look for that. And otherwise, we're going to spend quite a bit of time on the coaching search, as everyone will, and doing the season postmortems and trying to figure out maybe where things went wrong that we haven't already spent a lot of time talking about.
Okay, that makes sense. And of course, you can find Dave on Twitter at the Falcoholic, tweeting it up. And yeah, so appreciate it, Dave, coming on, talking with me, and we'll see what happens. I mean, yeah, I don't know what else to say, but it'll be interesting to see. Like, part of me wants to be optimistic in certain regards, but part of me, you know, the pessimist side of me has a healthy degree of skepticism, and it does seem like you have at least a similar streak of skepticism about how some of these issues are going to get resolved. But, you know, maybe the Falcons, you know, surprise us. It wouldn't be the first time. So we can look forward to that, I guess.
Knock on wood.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Dave, appreciate it. And enjoy 2019, man.
Hey, enjoy the new year.
There you have it. Plan is to be back tomorrow on Friday to wrap up this week with more coaching talk and get, you know, we'll see if that person has a different or the same perspective on some of these coaching issues. So, and then we'll be back next week. We'll probably start things off Monday with a Q&A. You know, we'll call it a Monday mailbag episode. So if you have any questions, you can send those in. Of course, I'm on Twitter at Falcfans. If it's podcast related or, you know, for that Q&A, just go ahead, send it over to Locked On Falcons. That's the show's Twitter handle. Locked On Falcons, of course, is the name of the Facebook page as well, where you can submit questions and comments. You can also send an email to lockedonfalcons@mail.com. And of course, you can leave a comment at falcons.com as well, where the podcast is posted daily. So similar to the Falcoholic, we'll eventually get into our season review. I don't know if I'll start that next week. I got to plan some stuff first. I got to, you know, map out sort of what this podcast schedule is going to be like in January and whatnot. So I'll figure it out, but definitely by Monday, I should give you guys a more updated schedule on sort of at least over the next couple of weeks, what things will look like. So you can look forward to that. And until then.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.